Hey, friends.
Thanks for joining us once again for part 3 of The Villains of Outlander. If you missed part 1 and 2, make sure you go back and check them out.
And now we're going to jump right in.
Welcome to Outlander with Friends podcast, where we talk about our favorite Outlander episodes, favorite whiskeys, and all the other bits that nobody wants to talk about.
This podcast is not for the faint of heart, so if you've read about it or watched it, we're here for it. It's time for Outlander with Friends.
What was your other one? Did you say Leary?
She's done Leary.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you've done Leary. Okay.
Yeah.
What did you have her as? Was she that was your villain? Why was she your villain?
I had her as a villain, but I noticed some other people don't see her as a villain. They think of her as more of a victim. And I don't have a strong feeling either way about Leary, but I do Malva as far as victim versus villain.
Let's talk about Malva.
I feel for Malva. I have a hard time calling her a villain. I just feel like based on everything that she, I mean, I know she tried to kill Claire
and her daddy,
among other things, but
don't forget she tried to kill her dad too.
Dude kind of had, I mean, but I think
I need to understand. I'm not saying that what you're saying is wrong. I just need to understand your logic, because I try to make a good case for some of these people and y'all are like, no, but I'm like, how is she the victim? She tried to kill like her whole family and some.
So like you were saying, I listen to a lot of true crime and I actually really, I don't enjoy, but I like to hear about the villain, the serial killer, or whatever led them to what they did. And so I think I see that so clearly with Malva and just her being abused by her brother and you know, those types of things. I just feel like that can really fuck up your psyche and just make you do crazy things.
Kind of like Stephen Bonnet, right?
Yeah. I just feel like we didn't get enough of his backstory. What is his backstory?
You got to read the books, girl.
I know.
That's why I'm able to make a case for him, because I read his story.
You're right.
And then I just, you know, did a little analyzing. And I'm like, you know what? I can see how he became the villain that people know and hate. But Malva.
But I do feel that Malva, there probably is more in the books about Malva that I don't even know, because I didn't read that far. So
that brings me to Tom Christie then. Is Tom Christie a villain?
I'm torn.
Because if you think that Malva's a villain, then Tom Christie has to be a hero. Because he was basically just spending his whole life trying to thwart this evil witch, trying to kill everything in her path to get what she wanted. And it wasn't like, I'm not going to defend or vilify Malva. I'm just going to say what it is. Malva grew up in a household where people loved her, because I don't think her mom hated her, right? Am I correct in that assumption? I don't think her mom mistreated her. I think that also, even after her mom died, she was raised by her uncle. Right? Am I making sure? I'm going to make sure I'm saying these things right, because Tom Christie was in jail. He was in Artsmere, right?
That's right. Because wasn't her brother, maybe not even her brother, but I mean, it doesn't matter. He still shouldn't have done what he did, but
they were half siblings.
They're related. That was incest.
Okay. Yeah.
And abuse.
Well, Malva's father was Tom's brother. So.
Right.
Malva's.
And Tom and Alan was her half brother.
Yeah. They had the same mother. They had the same mother.
Okay. Yeah. Half brother, cousin,
brother,
whatever
cousin,
you want to call it.
Uncle, daddy. Brother,
so Tom married his brother's wife.
No, Tom
went to jail and told his brother to watch after his wife, and then Alan was already born, right?
Tom,
and
then and
Tom's brother got his wife pregnant.
Yeah.
Okay.
But she was not abused by her uncle, dad. You know what I'm saying?
She was. She was abused by her brother, cousin.
She was abused by her brother cousin and her mom.
But what about that? What about that? Spanking.
Oh, no. Hold on. Because you remember, Jamie whooped Claire's ass when she acted up.
I mean, you're right. And we were.
That was a thing of the times.
I think we both meant sexually abused. She was not sexually abused by Tom.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. She was not sexually abused by her uncle dad. And I have reason to believe that she did not grow up in a home where she was, I don't think her uncle was like her dad, like that strict religious upbringing. I think that came afterward. And I think that came, it stemmed from Christie's time in prison. And then knowing that his wife got pregnant by his brother, he took it out on her, but in a very strict religious way. He was trying to make her pay for the sins of her mother. But I don't think he did it because he hated her. I think he did it because he was kind of disillusioned by the fact that he tried to do the right thing. He ended up in prison because he was a quartermaster, wasn't he? Like he was a...
Yeah.
I think he was a quartermaster. And
he was like a supply guy for the...
So he was not trying to pick sides, but he was just trying to do what was best for his family to not get killed, still be a provider, and be a part of the cause. So I think he was jaded by all those things. And that was why his behavior toward Malva and Alan looked like it did.
I think he was also taking out his self-hatred upon Malva because he allowed himself, whatever he said about his wife being a witch, he allowed himself to be bewitched by her and to fall on, like, quote unquote, fall under her spell. And so when he was punishing Malva for the sins of her mother, I think he was also punishing her for his own viewpoint that he himself was a sinner or had become, like, the sins of his own weakness kind of thing.
But they were married, though, so I don't understand, like,
yeah,
they were married. He got bewitched. People said the same thing about Claire and Jamie, like Jamie was bewitched by Claire, but they were married, so it wasn't like...
Yeah, but...
I know they believe in witchcraft, but I get what you're saying.
Well, but Tom was so religious that he was... I'm talking more about, like, thou shalt not suffer a witch to live, like, more biblical. He was so devoutly religious that he loathed himself for not being strong enough to resist falling in love with his wife, who was a witch. I don't know if I'm explaining it very well.
He fell in love with
her. I mean, it makes sense to me.
But he fell in love with a witch. He fell in love with Claire. So how ironic is that? You know what I'm saying? Like, your wife probably wasn't a witch, but Claire was legit a witch. Like, let's just all be honest. If you can time travel, bitch, you are a witch. End of story.
Well, so he's a weak, weak man. Yeah. What are you going to do?
I said all those things to say this. What did that have to do with Malva being a psychopath? Even if, and I know I could say this based on the fact that my experience with people that grew up with super religious and strict parents, they tend to be like off the chain. Like I had a friend that was a pastor's daughter. She was wild and out of control. I don't know why. I think it's because they're so strict, but I don't remember at any point her trying to kill anybody to get what she wanted. That is a different type of evil that not even your parents can control. So Malva trying to kill Claire and trying to frame Jamie to be her baby daddy, sleeping with everybody on the ridge, and then turn around and try to kill her dad. I don't really think Tom had much to do with that.
You might be right.
It just seems like that's a lot to put on a man. You know what I'm saying? Like, he spent a lot of time in jail. That was something else. That was not Tom Christie's influence on Malva. He only been out of prison like 3 years, and this chick was trying to kill everybody. She was humping the whole ridge. They hadn't even been there that long. So all I'm saying is that Tom Christie may not be the villain everybody wants to portray him as, because he was literally just trying to do right by his crazy ass daughter. I think at some point, if she had just said that Alan was the one that got her pregnant, he would have believed it. Because they were so close and like conspiratory every time we saw them together, I think he would have been able to leap to that conclusion faster than just wanting to believe that it was Jamie, because he wanted what Jamie had. He was jealous of Jamie. There was envy. Those reactions that Tom Christie had that was spite. So it was just a way to kind of stick it to Jamie. But if Malva had said, yeah, it was Alan, he's my baby daddy, I think he would have believed her. I think he would have. And this wouldn't have gotten as crazy as it had on the ridge. Damn it, Malva. Put her down as a villain.
She did. She is a villain. I mean, but 100%. I did include her in my series.
You know who else is a villain? I'm just kidding. I was going to say Lizzie Weems. She's a villain.
Oh,
she is though. Oh, that is she is.
Damn.
Shots fired.
Shots fired.
I have not forgiven her for what she did
to Roger.
Nope. Even the fact that we didn't get the whole essence of the thruple, which I love, I still can't forgive her. I can't. Matter of fact, Mary Hawkins, you can throw her on that list too. I know she went through some shit, but guess what? You caused problems. You caused a lot of problems that could have been avoided.
Oh, come on.
No,
poor Mary. Nah.
Her little innocent self.
Innocent my ass.
What was I going to say? Who are we just talking about?
Lizzie Wings.
And her yes, her. So when Brianna was in there slapping everybody, why the hell yeah. didn't she slap Lizzie?
Yes. Lizzie's the one who needed a good slap during that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Slapped Ian, thank you. Slapped Jamie, but yeah.
Girl, I would have. Two-piece and a biscuit, girl. I'm knocking them front teeth out. This is all your fault. You had. She had so many opportunities. The thing that gets me about Lizzie, and I love Caitlin's portrayal of her so much, is that the transformation that this woman made from being this, oh, I can barely speak and I'm just so scared to, I'm sneaking out of windows and I'm humping both of these boys. She did a whole 180. I'm like, what the fuck is this?
I mean, true. We got to give her that.
The smirks on her face and like, what are you going to do about it? Yeah, I'm pregnant by both of these. Like, even in the books, I was like, who is this girl? She went from, I can't say nothing about the guy that I saw run off with. She couldn't even get it out, right? Ian had to coax it out of her. Then she had to see Roger and made all these wrong conclusions. But when I say this girl, the way that they had Lizzie sneaking around and doing all this stuff with those boys, I was like, who is this Lizzie? Where was she at when she was making a mistaken identity? You didn't mistake them twins. You got them right. If you want to stay here and say Roger was, why you get Roger mixed up? How did that happen? Lizzie, tell me that.
That's too funny. That's so true. Yeah, she can tell them twins apart.
Stay on that list. She ain't coming off that list of Christmas. She got to find something different. I can't. I absolutely cannot. She's staying on that damn list. And she can get on that list with the Browns. You got the Browns on that list? Put the Browns on that list, too.
Yeah, she
said, I said the Browns. The Browns. Who else? I got more. Bonnie Prince Charlie.
Yes, he's on my list, too. But I was trying to figure out, is he like a villain enough? I guess he is.
I think he's a village idiot. You could start a new one. Start a new list. Make him the village idiot.
Yeah.
Or John Gray. If you're going to do heroes and villains, slap him on the list.
Wait.
He's definitely a hero. Matter of fact, okay, I feel like John Gray is a
okay, good. Yeah.
Hero.
Yeah, like I thought you were going to make me.
Oh, no. I love Lord John.
Okay.
I think he's a bigger hero than Jamie.
All right.
He has honorable intentions everything he does.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I never really thought about that.
But I'll need to give him a shout out.
I got more, but I want to go back to hero, whatever. But reformed villain, Buck McKenzie.
Mm-hmm.
He got Roger hanged. We did talk.
So from here on out,
now
is he a good guy from here on out then?
Mostly. From season 7.
I'm going to say this.
I know that.
I am going to play public defender. Buck McKenzie, his circumstances made him a good guy. And that's it. So I wouldn't say reformed. I would say circumstantial evidence. Because had he not found out that his ass was going to die, I think that the fact that he got thrown through time is what changed him. Once again, his environment dictated how he was going to act because he needed them. So, yes, his ass got humble real quick because he was starving. His heart was fucked up. He was like, I don't know where these cars are coming from. What are cars? His circumstances made him reform. I guarantee you, had he came back down that hill, he'd be the same person I hated 2 seasons ago. I rest my case, Your Honor. I don't think he would have changed. Not one bit. I think that, again, I want to just acknowledge that much like Stephen Bonnet and other people that we've mentioned, their environment kind of dictated how they were going to portray themselves. Like Black Jack Randall.
Wait, no, I don't want to, we can't veer off because now I want to do devil's advocate because you went public defender. Or wait, did you go public defender or did you go devil's advocate for Buck? So the only thing that reformed, the only thing that quote unquote reformed him was his circumstances.
Right.
Okay. So we had an episode long ago where we talked about how Roger is quite, Roger is far, far, far from blameless in what happened with Buck. Roger's out there kissing his wife on the ship,
which happens to be his grandmother.
Roger does a shitty job. He's like hugging on Morag, great, great grandma, in the Alamance thing. All these,
so
you know,
weird.
Roger puts himself in some of these situations. And we'll leave aside the fact that I like Book Roger a lot more than I liked Show Roger for a very long time. But everything that Buck is doing is coming from his 18th century mindset of how a man protects his family. And when he found out in the 20th century that Roger was his descendant and Jemmy and Mandy were his descendants, all he did was continue to protect his family in the best way that he could, which was, I'm all in. What are we doing? Who do we got to kill? Let's get going. Let's go back in time if we have to. We're going to find this kid.
So, again, selfish reasons.
I don't think that's selfish at all. I don't think that's selfish at all.
You're right. So with that being said, Buck McKenzie's like, oh, I got thrown through these stones. And the same guy that I caught smooching on my wife is the first person I run to. He didn't run into him first, but let's just say he did for the sake of the show. And then he's like, oh yeah, we should definitely, y'all know how to get back? Oh yeah, let's go kill this motherfucker. Girl, please. You cannot convince me that that was the reason. Oh, we're family. Family's everything. He told you y'all were family on the ship and you beat his ass. He told you that y'all were family at the Battle of Alamance and you hung his ass. No, you're not going to tell me now that you done got thrown into the future that, oh yeah, family's everything. Nope. He told you three separate times I wasn't trying to fill on your wife. That's my grandma. I was just trying to kiss her. Absolutely, I'm not believing that.
I was just trying to kiss her.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Exhibit A, go to the scene where he said, we're related.
But I mean, back then, it probably that really probably don't matter back then because people were all up on their cousins and aunts and uncles and whatever else.
Thank you for bringing that point up. The fact that he was kissing his grandma the way that he was, even though she's younger than him. That was nothing wrong with that. That's how they were raised. Kissing cousins. They do it in the South all the time. They was in North Carolina. That's
right?
Real shit.
Exactly.
Here.
The pool was so small.
Oh my God.
That's why I had to go on eHarmony because the pool was so small over there.
I mean, that's real talk, though, because you
brought
you
that,
be
brought that right
part.
Back around, full circle. That was great.
I'm telling you, see? So try again. Buck stays on the villain list. He has to.
Fair enough. Now, the show, the break in season 7 is where we have discovered Rob Cameron is a villain.
Yes.
So we haven't gotten the full picture and he's not going to have any, sorry, spoiler alert. He's not going to have any redeeming things happen to him there. It is unquestionable. This dude is a villain.
I think too.
The one we haven't seen enough of yet, but is going to wind up being a villain is Ezekiel Richardson.
Ooh.
Who is Williams' commanding officer. There's a whole lot more to come. We don't know what the show's going to do with him, but in the books, This is a bad dude.
He is off the damn chain in the books.
Yeah.
He is off the chain.
Yep.
Now, have we seen him yet?
Yeah, he's the one who sent William into the dismal swamp.
Okay. Got it. Yeah.
And then he comes back and's like, oh shit, you made it.
Pretty much. Wait a minute. You were supposed to. Oh, yeah. Here, let me give you another. Let me send you off someplace else.
Yeah. So.
But we don't know his motives yet.
Anywho, yeah. I stick to my story. But yeah, we dropped off. What was it? Lord John Grey that we dropped off?
Yes. Well, he was Hero. And I stopped you from going down the road of Blackjack.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah.
I just feel like...
Does anybody have anything negative to say about Lord John? Because I want to hear it if they do. But
I think he's a bigger... No, like I said before, I think that he's a bigger hero than Jaime is. He had the option, and he had the same... In a lot of instances, the same choices that a lot of our heroes had, and he always picked the right choice in, like, moral standards. Even though a lot of the things that he did in his personal life, people thought, I mean, obviously he would have got killed for and tried for. But in my eyes, he never made the wrong decisions. If we were like looking through a moral compass and you had to choose right or wrong, he always chose the right. So that is my number one hero, Outlander.
So bloody honorable. I want him to be.
He really is.
I want a spinoff. I want the Lord John Grey spinoff. We need to start a petition. We need to write some letters to stars. Come on. What are you waiting for?
No, we need to talk to, what's her name? Caitlin Wright? Ritt? Wrights? We need to talk to her.
Caitlin Wrights?
We need to have her write. And then we need to march on stars. We need to make it like a million woman march from the East Coast. Well, for you, like, you know, a couple hours, but still. We gonna walk down there. We're gonna demand that somebody make this show. We're gonna demand it.
Yep.
Probably get kicked off of campus and arrested, but we're gonna still try.
If we're gonna raise a ruckus and get kicked off of campus, we might as well do it when they're back in production, so that we can bring the whole crowd out there to see the chaos that we create.
Or we could just join the picket. And then be like, well, while you're at it, make Lord John Grey. I mean, I don't know what they're fighting for, but whatever you're fighting for, add this to it.
Yeah, add this to the list.
Yeah, that doesn't even rhyme.
Workshop that, Ivy.
We'll work on it and come back later. Oh, man. Yeah, so... That was pretty intense. I think that if I had to think about what the dozen or so characters that we discussed, that I think at least half of mine are not going to get the electric chair. I think they're going to at least get life. I think that I've made a solid case for them. And
so who do you think ultimately deserves the electric chair of all the villains?
I think... No, I think Stephen Bonnet. I know that I just made a very compelling case for him. But in the end, I think of the long-lasting effect of your crime. Because I think that I'm not a lawyer or any kind of legal representation, but I've watched enough crime shows. And most sentences that are like if you don't have a body, or if it's kind of like not like a victimless crime, they always look at the tertiary effects of that crime and how it affects people down the road, right? So they're like, you know, you kidnap this kid, but you brought her back, but the psychological damage of this kid that will affect him or her for the next 18 years, you're going to get 18 years to life. That's why some of those sentences carry such, because you're like, dang, man, you get a life sentence for kidnapping, even if you bring them back or if they get found unharmed. Because of the psychological impact of what you did to that family and to that child or that person. And I think that Stephen Bonnet falls into that category. And I'm only speaking of the Frasers. I'm not talking about all the other shit he did. Because the fact that Jaime had to watch his friend get hung and then you escape and hide in his wagon, and he essentially helped you escape, and then he helped you escape again, and then you played on his emotions, because I don't think Jamie's naive enough to believe that this man was, I only got caught because they wanted to catch me. You got caught because you're a bad person and you did something stupid. Mm-hmm. But then the fact that he let him go, that fucked with Jamie's psyche. Even if he thought that what he did was kind of morally right. But then you rob him of everything that he worked for. Everything that he went over there to get his nephew. He didn't come to stay. Now he's stuck in a land where he doesn't know anybody, away from his family, away from his country. And he has no means to like make what happened in Scotland right, or what make what is happening in America right. And he brought Claire into this, right? So he's trying to shed this life that he had made being a criminal and show Claire himself in a new light. And then Stephen Bonnet does this shit. So now he has to go to a relative that he hasn't seen in 40 years as a beggar. He fucked with this man for several years. And even in the books, it lasted longer in the books than it did in the show. So right. That's why I think that he deserves the electric chair. He caused indirectly for his daughter to get raped, his friend to get killed, his son-in-law to get
not indirectly.
Punked, you know what I mean?
He directly caused Jamie's daughter to get raped. He didn't do it,
you know what I mean? Well, no, because like if he had turned, you know, Stephen Bonnet in.
Oh, you mean Jamie indirectly caused his, I thought you meant Stephen Bonnet. Okay. Stephen Bonnet directly caused Brianna to get raped. Like, wait, what?
Oh, no. I was confused. Jamie indirectly caused all of these events. And I think that's why if he were in a modern day court, even if he never got caught for all the other murders and robbery and, you know, racketeering and all that other stuff he had done, he would have got the electric chair just for that alone.
Oh, interesting.
Because the psychological damage he did to the family for almost a decade was crazy. Because in the books, I think it was like 5 or 6 years that this went on.
I'm not sure how long it was.
That's right. Because I feel like I remember seeing where they said that like they kind of like shortened the Stephen Bonnet storyline. Like they killed him off sooner in the show than they did in the books.
Yeah, because in the books it lasted.
Yeah, he disappeared for a while in the books. And they brought it forward from book 6 to season 5 to wrap up his storyline within one season.
Yeah. But that's why, I mean, Black Jack Randall, I'm not saying he would be my number like 3 or 4. I don't have him at the top of my list.
Wow.
Because and let me just say why. I think that people have him at the top of the list because he's the first villain that we ran into.
Yeah.
In the story. And his story was vicious. But if you had met Stephen Bonnet first, I think he would have been at the top of your list. If you had to start from season 3 or 4 and move forward, Stephen Bonnet would be at the top of your list. Because even though Randall did some pretty shitty things, you only saw him do shitty things to Jamie. You didn't see him do shitty things. He tried to rape Jenny. He didn't rape her. And unfortunately, that's something that happens a lot in militaries that are unprofessional or unchecked. Even now, I can guarantee you that you can go to any village that any military has been in and they've been raped or pillaged or molested in some sort of way. Like women and children are always the victims. So I'm not excusing his behavior. I'm not. But what I'm saying is he is probably part of a culture that needs to be checked. Because everyone saw what Black Jack Randall was doing. He was a fucking captain. He wasn't a major. He wasn't a lieutenant colonel. He was a captain. You could have checked that behavior and he could have been gone. But people let it go on. Stephen Bonnet was a civilian doing this stuff.
Yeah.
He was a serial rapist, killer, et cetera, et cetera. That's the difference between those two, in my opinion.
And he did throw a kid just right out the window. Just
right off the fucking pool.
Yeah,
I get you're trying to preserve life, but you didn't have to. You could have quarantined them.
Yeah.
And let nature run its course, but you were throwing them off the boat, which is wild to me. But I think that if we had seen that first, he would have stayed at the top of the list. That's just my opinion.
And that makes sense to me.
I'll go down on the villains list just for this. I thought that putting the people with smallpox overboard was justified. That ship was too small to deal with quarantining people. Sorry.
This is coming from a woman that ain't got kids. Y'all know this, right?
Well, I have, you know, there's been times when my kids have pushed me. No, I'm just kidding.
Lord, she was like,
it's not serious, folks. It's a story. It's made up, okay?
We have to remind ourselves that.
Don't
sometimes.
Come for me.
Oh, shit.
Tamberly, so who's at the top of your electric chair list?
I mean, I hear Ivy's, you know, I hear what she's saying, but I think it's just the visual of what this man did to Jamie. And just, I don't know. I know that that's just, I don't know. I just can't get over it. I can't get over, like, he was such a, and, but was also, visual, what'd you say?
Was the visual. Cause like, I'm saying the visual was real, right? Again, this is early. Yeah. This is early before anybody really knew that there's probably a line that should be drawn in these shows when it comes to nudity and violence and sexual violence. Because they didn't clean that shit up until like season 5.
Right.
How was the visual of him getting raped versus Bree getting raped change your opinion about how?
I know.
Because like, I know. As a person that I can't relate to what Jamie went through. I'm not saying because he's a man. Because one, I've never been to prison. I've never been nailed to some shit. You know what I mean? Like tortured, none of that stuff. That's not a realistic experience for me. But what Bree went through, I could definitely put myself in her shoes. And I felt exactly all of what Sophie was trying to convey in that scene felt real to me. Like that was a very fucked up moment. And I've never experienced that, but I could put myself in her situation. It was hard for me to visualize what Jamie was going through as a person. Watching him and being able to empathize with the physical harm that he was going through. But also there was some acquiescence in Jamie's behavior because he said he wouldn't fight. So there wasn't real, like there wasn't a struggle. The struggle with Jamie was not to enjoy what was happening because of what he was doing to him to provoke that emotional response. That did not happen with Bree. That was violent and brutal to the very end. He beat her, then he raped her, and humiliated her. So, like, I think that's why, like, even in that aspect, I can't really put Black Jack Randall at the top of my list.
Yeah.
He was just being an asshole. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I hear you. And I always say Black Jack is my favorite villain, which is weird because I do have these strong feelings about him. But I think that it's because I just love that the way Tobias portrayed him. And I just think
I love Tobias.
He just embodied it.
Yeah. I love the duality of the characters that he played. He did them both so well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, damn it. Why y'all gotta be so mean to Frank, but fuck Frank. And also, fuck you know what I mean? Yeah. He did a great job with both of them. He really did. But look, Terry, who's at the top of your list? Are you going to keep Black Jack Randall at the top of your list too?
I am going to keep Black Jack Randall at the top of my list.
Okay.
What you were saying about sentencing and about what people do to kids and the, you know, long sentences that they get for kidnapping and stuff like that. The psychological damage that Black Jack did to Jamie, that was honed and practiced over years of Blackjack's life. And it continually tortured Jamie in his nightmares for decades after Blackjack died. Just because Jamie was an adult and acquiesced and agreed not to struggle in exchange for Blackjack releasing Claire and not going after her, to me does not excuse or does not it doesn't abate the psychological ramifications that Jamie had for decades afterwards, the PTSD.
Oh, no, I'm not. I don't want you to get it twisted. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that the reason why I think that he's running a close second or third, you know what I'm saying? Like these margins are slim. It's not like I can pile them all on top of each other and say they're all number one. But what I'm saying with Black Jack Randall, what he did to Jamie was not brutality. He knew that Jamie could overpower him because with brute strength. Black Jack loved Jamie. That was not an act of like hate toward him. He said it. He did it. You know what I'm saying? The fact that Jamie didn't enjoy it is just because of what was happening to him. And I'm not saying what he did was right or wrong, but his motives versus Stephen Bonnet's motives is what puts him at the top of my list. because Bree went in there under the assumption that they were going to make a deal. She was in the wrong mindset, but the brutality of what he did to Bree was not personal. He is a psycho. That's what he does. What Blackjack did to Jamie was personal. He branded him. He wanted him to love him. He tried to make Jamie love him, and he knew that he was not going to survive the next day. You know what I'm saying? So like, that's the last thing he wanted from this man. So that's why I think that comparing the two is not saying that both of their actions weren't heinous, or one was more excusable or did more psychological damage. If we were just going to stop cut scene and Jamie died the next day like he was supposed to, it wouldn't fucking matter. You know what I mean? Because the psychological damage just doesn't, none of that will exist because he's going to be dead. But he had to live with it. So we saw the torturous emotions and PTSD that he went through afterwards. But Stephen Bonnet fucked with Jamie from the day he met him until literally they found out that Jimmy was not his son. And he wasn't even alive for that shit. You know what I mean? He fucked his whole family. He fucked Roger up. He fucked Bree up. He fucked Claire up. He fucked Jamie up. He fucked young Ian. He went through the whole entire fucking family tree. Blackjack Randall had his vendetta was with Jamie. And it wasn't even vendetta. He loved that man. He loved him. And he was like, this is the only way I know how to show love. I just have to nail your ass down because you're bigger than me.
Oh, and I just watched you. Creeps. Oh, that gives me so much ick.
He was killing dude with a stick, man. He ain't about to let his ass just roam around that fucking prison. That's scary.
I don't know. You make a good argument, you make a good argument, but I still can't release the.
Hey, to each their own. I'm not mad at it.
Don't forget about what Blackjack did to Fergus too. I can't stop thinking about
and
that.
Fergus.
That's right. Oh my God. You know what? There's been people out there screaming at their phone for the last 20 minutes. Like, how come they didn't bring up what Blackjack did to Fergus?
That's true.
And I love Fergus.
So to that point, baby Fergus, man, like, again, life sentence. Even though, and I'm not, again, Fergus's circumstances created the image that we saw. And that's not even what we knew about him. Because if you read the books, you'd be like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
But again, that's the circumstances. He grew up like this. He didn't see that there was, I don't know if the psychological torment that Jamie went through would have been the same for Fergus. Just because he knew nothing else. Hmm. Whereas Jamie knew better. And he knew something else. And that's why, I don't know, it's different for me. But I'm not saying that they're not, they're at the top of the list. They're all going to go to hell. Like,
yes.
In my book, I'm going to light a torch. I'm going to burn this shit out of them. Whatever that place is, I'm going to make sure that, I'm like, hey, did you guys check the list to make sure that Blackjack Randall was here?
I'm like, you know, from that TV show.
Alan Bonnet. Matter of fact, I'm only here to make sure I'm going back up. I just wanted to make, are y'all good? Okay, we're good. Like, for real. Like, no, I ain't supposed to be here. I was just checking. Yeah. They're fictitious characters. Oh, I can't leave?
That's scary. I grew up Pentecostal, so that's scary.
I know, right?
Waking up in hell.
I just came down here to check. Girl, you messed up because you got to stay now. Oopsie. Well, that was fun, ladies. Tam, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Glad. Yeah, this was awesome. Interesting, thought-provoking discussion.
Very much so. Thank you, guys.
And I'm sad that I missed the part with Claire and Jamie, but I'm going to get to listen to it. I'll be listening for the first time with everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess we'll see what happens, right? So I'm going to churn up some other ideas about what our next episode is going to be in this little Droughtlander that we're having.
Anything to get us through.
And Tam, if you'd like to come back and join us, we'd love to have you.
I listen every week, and I love to hear you ladies chat. You always make me laugh. So anytime you want to have me on, I'll be glad. I got the microphone. I bought a microphone just for this.
Oh, yeah. I would love to have you back, girl. we can really get into, like, you know, I don't know. After you go through this list of heroes and villains, we might have to have another chat. You know what I mean? After
okay.
And please, anybody and everybody out there, please, please, please understand that I meant all of this shit. I'm just kidding. But don't at me, because it's just jokes, man.
Exactly.
That was Ivy that said that, by the way. That was not Terry. So I just want to clarify.
I sound like her. All right. Well, until next week, I guess we'll have to say goodbye. So,
all right. Thank you again, ladies.
Yeah, it's been so much.
All right.
See you guys later.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Good night.
Thank you all for listening. You can find us, follow and message us on Instagram at Outlander with Friends, or drop us an email at outlanderwithfriends@gmail.com. And hey, if you like the show, leave us a review and a 5-star rating. Listen next week for more T&I. Don't say we didn't warn you.